With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. This is Through the Looking Glass with Scott Wheeler on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome to Through the Looking Glass. I'm Scott Wheeler, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. And we have another power-packed show today on Through the Looking Glass. You'll want to stay with us. We've got a very interesting expert witness standing by. And we thank again the TNT Radio Network, which is willing to air some of this very controversial stuff that we bring up. It's not controversial because it's not fact-based. It is. We go to great lengths to document everything we do here. But it's never welcome in what many call the mainstream media, a phrase I hate because it's inaccurate. And first, let me bring you up to speed on what we're going to talk about today. For years, I've made this observation about the American media. I don't call it the mainstream media because it's not mainstream. What is mainstream anyway? If a news organization were mainstream, wouldn't that mean that it has the bulk of readers or viewers or listeners? I've made this point before. Fox News has always been labeled by the dominant media culture as conservative. But for years, Fox News had a larger audience than all the other cable news networks combined. Doesn't that in itself make it mainstream? How do you define mainstream? Isn't it where most of the people are? So you'd have to define Fox as the only mainstream outlet. Of course, things are changing now. It's not as reliable as it had been in the past. It's going through some changes. Looks like they think they're going to make a course correction to feign being fair and balanced, which really means being more like what the Democrat Party apparatchik media thinks it should be. We're seeing that now. And so if the biggest network with the biggest amount of viewers, bigger than all the other news networks combined, if that's not mainstream, what is? But they get labeled conservative media, or they used to. They still do, even though they've never been conservative for that matter. They've just reported on Democrat Party scandals that the rest of the media cover up. And that makes them conservative. I know this well because in the 90s, I was not a committed ideological journalist. But because I investigated Clinton, I suddenly became labeled a conservative journalist. Because if I was against Clinton, then I had to be a right winger. Because the rest of the media was in lockstep with the Democrat Party in support of Clinton, no matter what he did, including colluding with Communist China, that's what I was taken to the woodshed by my colleagues for, although many of them never wanted to debate those issues because they would lose and they knew it. Anyway, journalists believe that their readers aren't smart enough to know that they should trust them. If you can believe that, it's true. They actually say it in private. You'll hear them talk about it, that people just aren't smart enough to know they should trust us because we have editors and stuff, is what they claim, that there's some kind of process behind it. That's hogwash. For years, I've observed that all it takes for the media to produce a Republican scandal is a third generation rumor of a parking violation, and it becomes headline news. True or not, truth of it didn't matter. They just pursued the story and said, here's what somebody said. Even if that person was a known liar, and I could point to examples of that. Even a guy convicted of perjury, lying in court, was a source for CNN in an attack story on Dan Quayle. But never mind. But to accuse a Democrat, You need 100 eyewitnesses plus videotape, and that's still not enough. When I used to say that, I thought I was being hyperbolic. But with the evidence of the Hunter Biden laptop, the media has actually made that statement, not hyperbole, but true. There were literally hundreds of witnesses, eyewitnesses, whose emails appeared, email addresses were on Hunter Biden's computer. None of them were contacted. Fox News contacted some. That's how they verified the story before the election. There was also videotape of Hunter Biden. Some of that video was video that only Hunter Biden could have taken himself. Yet it was covered up and labeled Russian propaganda, despite the fact. And I'm going to tell you this because everybody in town knew that was a lie. It was not Russian propaganda. Everybody knew that because everybody in town knew that Obama didn't want Biden to run for president in 2016 because they knew about the scandals. And Biden and Obama and the media were presenting him as a scandal-free that his administration was scandal-free, which was a lie in itself, but they thought they could make the claim, and they were concerned, Obama that is, were concerned that Biden would spoil that for him because opposition research would start looking into Hunter Biden and these allegations that everybody knew about. Everybody knew Hunter was collecting on his dad's name. So when they pretended not to believe what was on the laptop, even though it was right there in front, easy to verify, they still maintained the lie and wonder why nobody trusts them. And that brings us to where we are now, brings us to the CNN broadcast of Trump's town hall. Democrats have claimed in one form or another that every presidential election that was won by a Republican since 1980 was stolen from them. And in every case, the media either amplified those lies or allowed Democrats to say it unchallenged. But this was Caitlin Collins of CNN's response to Trump. They had this exchange. Trump said, "That was a rigged election. And it's a shame that we had to go through it. It's very bad for our country." And all over the world, they looked at it and they saw exactly what everyone else saw. And you look, even if you look recently with the 51 intelligence agents, that made a 16-point difference. Collins said, "But Mr. President," Collins said, "Mr. President, back to what you just said there, though, it was not a rigged election. It was not a stolen election." This is a journalist saying this. "You and your supporters lost more than 60 court cases on the election, and it's been nearly 2.5 years. Can you publicly acknowledge that you did not lose the 2020 election?" Well, let me just ask, has anyone in the media asked Hillary Clinton, told Hillary Clinton that the election wasn't stolen? Has anyone said, "Can you publicly acknowledge that you did lose the 2020 election?" Nobody said that to Hillary Clinton. Nobody said it to John Kerry. Nobody said it to Al Gore. Nobody said it to Mike Dukakis. Nobody said it to Walter Mondale, and nobody said it to Jimmy Carter. Lies are allowed to prevail if they go the right direction. Now, there's a lot of ways to rig an election. It can be done by amplifying lies manufactured by the Democrat Party, as in the case of the Russia collusion propaganda. It can also be a poorly policed election, which the 2020 election was, with no real evidence of allegations of fraud that were never even investigated. 2020 was a unique election year because of the overhyped pandemic. Election rules were changed especially in swing states. Funny how those got the most attention for the immediate and emergency changes. Now a journalist should challenge Trump on the idea that it was rigged because he needs to provide evidence for why he believes that, why he believes it, and why it, you know, what is the evidence? And he could readily have that available through multiple credible sources, including my reporting. But no journalist, none, no journalist can claim that it was not a rigged election because the corrupt media coverage of Trump leading up to the election is itself evidence the election was rigged, let alone the thousands of unmonitored ballot drop boxes that were counted in heavy Democrat districts, even though it was against the law, and some of those districts even admit it when they were repeatedly challenged and sued to find the chain of custody documents that were supposed to be with those drop boxes. In one case, Fulton County, Georgia, they couldn't even find half of them. Yet all the votes that they couldn't account for counted. Unsurprisingly, Fulton County went about 72% for Biden. So, and it's the largest county in Georgia. It was the difference in the election by far. So no journalist can claim the election wasn't rigged because nobody knows. No one can say that with certainty, that it wasn't rigged. There's plenty of evidence that it was, and there is definitely interference by the media, which also makes it a rigged election. Let me also point out that the Democrat Party apparatchiks in the media believed the election was on the level. They would not have dispatched, they would have dispatched teams everywhere those fraud, there was claims of fraud in order to debunk it. They would have had teams everywhere proving it. And then happy to report, they found there was no evidence of fraud there. They didn't do that. More evidence that they actually knew they might find something they didn't want to have to report. So they just didn't. They relied on the phony court case argument, which is a canard because none of the cases ever litigated election fraud. They litigated whether or not it was the proper venue or the proper case or the proper argument. They did not review any evidence of vote fraud. Now, let me bring in our expert witness. Dominic Rapini has uncovered evidence of a different kind of election fraud. He's a lifelong Connecticut native. And in 2022, Mr. Rapini ran as a Republican for the Secretary of State, a very important position. That's why George Soros focuses so many efforts on Secretary of State positions around the country, because that's who makes a lot of the election calls. And nobody really wants to talk about that, but it is, and we could go back to a 2005 book written by a guy named Matthew Bai about this very thing. Soros and company concluded that they needed to control the secretaries of state if they were to make sure that the right person won. And we know what they mean by the right person. Back to our expert witness. Mr. Rapini he's also run for U.S. Senate in the past from Connecticut. Mr. Rapini noticed an unusual trend in political financing of Democrat Party campaigns and discovered evidence of widespread fraud and money laundering, which has led him to a crusade to demand answers and official investigations. Mr. Rapini, welcome to Through the Looking Glass.
Oh, Scott, thanks for having me today. God, your preamble there got me warmed up.
I was just going to apologize for keeping you in the hot box so long while I prattled on.
In fact, I want to add to some things you said. First of all, you forgot you forgot one of the biggest election deniers there was in the last 20 years was Stacey Abrams in Georgia. She declared, she's on video for like 39 times saying that she won the election for governor in Georgia, you know, in 20.
And yet never accused of being an election denier except by the conservative media. But I actually did a lot of reporting on Stacey Abrams. She was she was one of those people instrumental in getting Georgia to go for this ballot. Her group or organization was one of the groups monitoring the drop boxes. And I mean, in the most bizarre deal that the Secretary of State there, Brad Raffensperger, made, he's a Republican, supposedly. He made the deal with Stacey Abrams, allowing her organization to police a large portion of the drop boxes.
That was entered into a consent decree that she had no leverage over him that we know of, you know, that would result in him agreeing to that. He didn't have to agree with anything. He had all the leverage. I don't know why.
Yes, he didn't tell any of the Republicans that he did it either. They found out when Stacey Abrams, months later, Stacey Abrams, I had a conversation with a Republican congressman from Georgia about this. He said, we were talking to Raffensperger repeatedly about preparation for the election, and he never mentioned the Abrams consent decree. And it was Jody Heiss, by the way. He said he never mentioned the consent decree to him. They learned it from Stacey Abrams. But he said Raffensperger always acted nervous in the election meetings they held.
Well, for good reason. And now we know. And you're talking about rigging elections. I'm going to give you another good example, of the rigging, right? So we talked about, you know, this incredible wave of changes in election laws, last minute laws, many of them against the constitution of the respective states, right? Connecticut, we did it here. We ran through a legislation that said that changed our constitutional definition of absentee ballot voting. They changed it so it can say illness or some crazy little word like that to allow for no excuse absentee mailing during the clinic. In my organization at the time, Fight Voter Fraud, we raised $100,000 to fight that. And we lost again, you know, guess what? Against a bunch of 9 judges that were all Democrat appointees. And so they said, no, this is legal. And of course, they go to ratify it and say, we did force a special vote in the legislature. And of course, you know, half of the Republicans voted for it. I mean, it's just, that's so disappointing, right? So disheartening. But then in Pennsylvania, they did the same thing. And after the election, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court came back and said, you know what? That was an illegal change in our constitution. And they repealed that, the ability to do mail-in voting. Of course, the damage was done, right? But it proves that this stuff was forced through. It was unconstitutional in respective states. And that by definition is rigging, right? And it's inescapable.
That, and many, many voter election organizations have said that for years. They've said you can't do that. You can't do that kind of voting. Mm. But let me take a short time out, Mr. Rapini. When we come back, we're going to talk about this evidence of massive fraud that you've uncovered. And I've looked at the data, and it is hard to believe. But we'll take a break when we come.
Stay tuned. This is going to be fun.
Yeah, it will be very informative. So we'll take a short time out. When we get back on Through the Looking Glass, you'll hear some pretty startling facts and data. Stay tuned.
TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
You have the press conference that was held by House Republicans, as they say, documenting the Biden family members, I think 9 of them, getting payments when he was vice president. Even his grandchildren, Hunter Biden's wife, his former wife, his other son's widow, they all got money from various countries through LLCs, and nobody could find out there is no Biden family business. I mean, what did they do? You know, you talk about Jared Kushner or whatever, or Trump's hotels. Okay, those are products. That's real stuff. What did the Bidens do to get this? I think it was a total of $10 million. So you had that. just crazy, crazy stuff.
Steve Malzberg on TNT Radio.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. One reason people tune in to TNT Radio is often because they're loyal to a specific show or personality. Our personalities have been a part of people's daily routine, and people continue to tune in.
They trust TNT Radio
and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
At the top of the hour, we'll keep on top of the news.
It's the most important thing we can do.
On today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Through the Looking Glass on TNT Radio. I'm Scott Wheeler, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Joining us is Dominic Rapini. He is has run for the U.S. Senate in Connecticut and also for Secretary of State of Connecticut. But we're talking about his investigation that has uncovered massive evidence of massive fraud here. And I'll tease you by saying in 2021 and 22, data, an estimated 1.9 million was donated from 18 residents in Connecticut whose names were used without their knowledge, approximately 115,000 times. Donors who gave their statements claimed they did not make these donations as presented in their FEC reports. It is not known whose credit card was used and falsely associated with other names. The Connecticut Attorney General was supplied with your findings. But that's just the tip of the iceberg, isn't it, Mr. Rapini? You've uncovered massive data showing millions and millions of dollars were donated to Democrats in the names of donors who did not have the means to make those donations, in some cases, thousands and thousands of times for one donor. Please explain.
Yeah, so that's a good summary, Todd and Scott, it is a tip of the iceberg, right? So there are citizen journalists across the country that are doing similar research. And what I've done is I focus on Connecticut and I've fit into a national puzzle. So yeah, we have these 18 donors that we've identified in Connecticut. I picked them based on their frequency of voting. By the way, this is public information from FEC.gov. I mean, any one of you can go look up your name and pull up your history of federal contributions, and you'll be able to see what your history looks like. Now, the average donor gives about 1.5 times a year, according to the FEC. But you know, I've identified donors that are giving 4,000 or 5,000 times in a year, and these are all donations. Now, some of these donations are duplicates or they're split up through different committees, so they look bigger than they are, but we can actually weed that out using some coding in the database. And we come down to these numbers. Now, there are 14 Democrats. There are also 4 Republicans in here that I give them a special treatment in terms of since I have ways to find out who they are. But, you know, I went and interviewed 7 of these folks. I've actually went to interview more of them, but I can't get them all to come to the door. You know, they live in a single, you know, I met Susan Salata in Bridgeport. She lives in a little, you know, like a 2-bedroom ranch and in one of the poorest cities of our state. And, you know, and I went and showed her some of her FEC data. I showed her a summary of her donations. Right. And I showed her that for many years from 2012 on, she gave, you know, maybe, you know, 800 donations or less, you know, over the course of many years. But in 2022, I showed her that she made 4,200 donations in 1 year for about $40,000. Now she's coming to the front door. She has, she's disabled and she's in shock when she sees this information. I mean, she literally was averaging 340 donations a month for 12 months. Right, it's just an extraordinary number. And
did you notice that she had the means to donate that kind of money?
No, she didn't have the means to get her house painted. Okay, or to have her lawn cut.
She couldn't make her small house payment but she was giving $40,000 to the.
I don't know about her house payment, but I'm thinking her house was not maintained, and she was on a fixed income. And when I showed her numbers, and I said, I go, Susan, you gave the 49 different unique candidates in committees around the country. And she didn't recognize any of these places, right? These candidates, these committees. And she certainly didn't have the $40,000. She told me, I don't have that kind of money to do this. And I donate, you know, 50 bucks here, 70 bucks here. I do some things, but I don't do $40,000. And so she signed an affidavit saying that this was not me. And I met other people like her across the state. I went to visit many others, but you know, you knocking on doors, you're not always going to get engaged people. So we're seeing this pattern here in Connecticut, and I'm amplifying it with specific donors. But across the country, general people doing some of the work like I'm doing are going out, and we've identified. We roll up a forecast from every state and the number of people that we're targeting. And we're finding about 3 million donors, right? That we suspect most of them don't even know these donations are being made in their name.
Now you said your projected number is $9.8 billion, yes. Maybe yeah, illegally.
Yeah, and by 3 million people, wow. With across 63 million donations. Now in Connecticut, I was able to map this up to the Connecticut voter rolls because I have that data on my computer. And so I was able to get their ages, date of birth, and their political affiliation. Most of the journalists don't even have, you know, most of the citizens who do this research don't even have that info because it's really hard to get. And we're going to talk about that later. So what was interesting about these 18 people, the average age was 78 years old. Right? Think about it.
The average age was 78. So the possibility, I guess, that people assume that they would be harder to find or they would be, maybe wouldn't remember or
less likely to, you know, you go to FEC.gov and look up their donations. Right. In fact, I bet almost everybody listening to this show right now has never done that.
Okay? Oh, sure. Most people, virtually no one does, because not that many people donate actually. But when you think about this, you and I spoke earlier this week, I said this could set some of these people up for an IRS audit. The IRS looks at this. This is public data. It's the kind of thing that the Internal Revenue Service farms to look for evidence of tax fraud. This could actually set some of these people up for that.
Hey, Susan, for example. Hey, Susan, you know, you between Social Security and your pension, you get $1,900 a month. Okay. You live in this house and all of a sudden, where'd you come up with $40,000? Right, that's an IRS question, you know.
That is part of their methodology for finding tax cheats. Is that sort of public information? They've acknowledged this in the past.
According to data, here's another one. Here, and this gentleman is a professor of biology at Yale University. He's very liberal. I met him in person, and his name is Clifford Slayman. And we didn't have politics in common, but we both had science in common. And you'll remember him. He was on page 6 of that brief, Scott. And this guy made, you know, minor donations for years. Then all of a sudden in 2020, 21, and 22, he had an enormous spike. We're talking, you know, 500% increase in his dollars and number of donations. And he donated to
2,132 donations and $75,000.
Wow. Right.
In 2022.
He averaged in 2022 alone, he averaged 84 donations a month and to 90 different unique committees. Now, to the listeners, right? How many, if you donate to a federal candidate, you might give to Trump and you'll give to Nikki Haley and you'll give to your congressman. You know, you might give to Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio because they're national figures. But you may get 5-10 people, right? But would you give to 90? I was like, oh my God.
Let me explain to the listeners. When you say committee, there are, when a candidate is running for Senate or for the House, they have their own committee. But then there are also separate committees that are supposed to be not connected to candidates, but they do the same. They duplicate the work that a particular candidate would want done. So, like a PAC, a Blue Strategies PAC, Blue States PAC, for example, Democrat Party PAC, they would run ads to help whoever they're trying to help. Right. Like they might help Joe Manchin, or they might help.
Let me give you examples. Like here's one: abolish the Electoral College. That's a beauty, right? A Woman's Place. The Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, right? Then there's Al Franken's Bellows for Senate. I don't know, where did that guy even run? So they're from all over. Fetterman for PA, we know that one, right? Warnock. So there's committees and there's candidates, right? So to your point, Scott. And so those are just part of the abnormalities that we're seeing. And what's interesting, this three-year period, 2020, 21, 22, that's where all these 18 people had these huge spikes on their donations. I just put them on a bar chart and popped them up. I did the same bar chart for the top 20 donors in Florida. Same thing. Nothing. You know, very minor donations from these people from 2012 to 2019. And then they spiked up like the graph looks like a hockey stick, the way it spikes up in the middle of this. So these are really some incredible findings that we're coming across. So, you know, let me
break in here and kind of explain what might be going on with this, because as we discussed the other day, when you get back in the 90s, the communist China wanted to get Bill Clinton reelected. They actually said that. And they needed a way to funnel money to him. And they actually funneled money to him in 1992 also. In the 92 election, very few people are aware of that. But in the 1996 election, they needed to funnel millions of dollars to him. And they went around finding people. It was there was this famous video of this Indonesian gardener, Indonesian immigrant to the United States. And he was a gardener, a person of no means, but he made a $50,000 contribution to the DNC and the Democrat National Committee. And so they, tracing it back, they found a whole series of illegal donors. In some cases, they weren't even American citizens and they're thus not allowed to donate. But you had a pile of money over here that was illegal that needed to be laundered in to the Clinton campaign. So they found straw donors. They found real donors and gave them the money. And they found straw donors as well to make the donations. And which, if everyone probably remembers, Dinesh D'Souza went to jail for doing that with a $10,000 donation. Or $20,000. I think he paid two employees $5,000 each to make donations to his friend's campaign, and he went to jail for it. $10,000 worth right there. He went to jail for that. Nobody went to jail in the for laundering millions of dollars to Bill Clinton's campaign in the 1990s. So what we have here, the assumption we'd be working with, Mr. Rapini, is that the Democrats had access to a lot of money that was illegal, that couldn't be donated directly. And they needed to get...
It could have been corporations. It could have been foreign entities, right?
There's a lot they can do with their money. That's why I think that probably the pot of money was somewhere outside the United States, and we have this media obsession with rigging elections and foreign collusion. You know, since the Democrats manufactured that 2016 story about Trump-Russia collusion, since then the media has been fixated on this. Of course, it only goes one way. Your allegations here, the evidence you've uncovered here shows something illegal is being done. I don't think American corporations would do this because they're too paranoid of breaking the law. Who would do this, well, though? People who can't be prosecuted.
It would be a corporation.
Yeah, I mean, not saying corporations are. Yeah, not, I'm not implying that corporations are sweet and clean.
Right. It's more.
But I'm just saying it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just saying that they are. Where? How is this going to be done? That could not reflect. You know, could not involve them. You know, a scandal like this blowing up could do a lot of damage, and so it's hard to imagine corporations participating in a money laundering scheme.
Yeah, you make a good point.
But so the pattern would indicate that this is illegal money that can't be laundered through normal channels, and therefore, and the belief that corporations can't donate is another fallacy that people operate under, and the political class and the media go along with it. Yeah, corporations write big checks. They could, for the DNC, they could write $100,000. You know, Shell Oil can write $100,000 check to the DNC. Yeah. They can't write $100,000 check to Joe Biden's campaign, but they can make $100,000 check to the DNC, and they can even tell the DNC, we really like Joe Biden, and they'll know what to do with the money. So it's kind of a sham. And, you know, the Democrats love to bloviate about dark money and politics and all that, but they're the guiltiest among them. In fact, the whole McCain-Feingold deal was to make it more difficult for Republicans to equal the Democrats, because who were getting tons of money and help and labor from labor unions, which weren't restricted in their donations, but corporations were,
and then because they're membership organizations, they're treated differently, you know,
treated entirely differently. And what a coincidence, it favors the Democrats again, validating what I say constantly, and that is, it doesn't matter who wins the elections, the Democrats are always in charge. Let me take a short time out, Mr. Rapini, and then we want to hear more about these donations you've uncovered, because it's not just in Connecticut. And it is it stands to be one of the biggest scandals in electioneering in a long time. We'll be right back with more on TNT Radio's Through the Looking Glass right after this.
With his expert analysis and opinion,
this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
They say that in war, the first casualty is the truth. And make no mistake, we're in a war with people who use lies in order to increase their control over us. We've seen three glaring examples of this just in the past week. First, ABC News censored Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s explanation of the connection between vaccines and autism. They just edited out his answers as though he had never given them, despite the fact that they were based on peer-reviewed science. In a town hall debate in New Hampshire, CNN impudent hoyden Caitlin Collins kept repeating lies over and over again, attempting to quote-unquote fact-check President Trump whenever he said things that are demonstrably true. At one point, no doubt listening to the voices in her ear, poor Caitlin said there wasn't a single fraudulent vote in the state of Wisconsin, at which point the audience had the best laugh of the evening. And now comes the American Academy of Pediatrics doing a continuing education module that continues to push COVID lies and urge practitioners to counter demonstrably provable facts with the lies that constitute the official narrative that have been pushed for the last 3 years. We are definitely at war with the liars, but fear not. The truth needs no defense. It simply needs to be let loose. It will defend itself. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
A man's home is his castle, but his men's shed, that's his kingdom. There are now more than 1,000 men's sheds across Australia, and they're more than just a shed. You can make things, grow things, find a mate, be a mate, shoulder to shoulder. The Australian Men's Shed Association can help to find a shed near you.
There's something for you at the Men's Shed.
Investigating and reporting on government corruption and overreach, national security, national and international issues. You're listening to Scott Wheeler and Through the Looking Glass on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Through the Looking Glass. I'm Scott Wheeler. Today we're speaking with Dominic Rapini, he's actually a tech executive who became concerned about politics and ran for the Senate from Connecticut a few years back, and most recently ran for Secretary of State because he saw election irregularities that he thought needed to be addressed. Well, once he got into this, he uncovered millions of dollars in unexplained donations to the Democrat Party made on behalf of innocent people, some of whom have signed affidavits saying, I not only didn't make those donations, I couldn't make those donations. And Mr. Rapini, this is a staggering investigation. I'm so glad that you have undertaken it. Tell us a little bit more. You went outside of Connecticut also. You've just begun to expand the investigation. What else have you found?
Well, to be very clear and very fair, there are organizations like Election Watch in Wisconsin that have done an enormous amount of work on this. And I've picked up on what they're doing and focused on Connecticut, and I'm focusing now on getting the word out. So there are literally citizen journalists in every state who are looking at their voter rolls and looking at their donation histories in the FEC and identifying and bringing people. Most cases there, they're getting them on video where they're denying these issues. I'm actually getting people to sign a signed affidavit. I just feel that's a little bit more credible because I'm taking this stuff to attorney generals. So for the last few days, I went to the Republican National Committee. I've been to Judicial Watch. I've been staffers up on Capitol Hill and presenting this information. And, these are smart people, smart lawyers are poking holes at it. But then every time they poke a hole at it, I'm able to give them a counter and say, no, here's what you're seeing. And whatever these particular loopholes could be, the magnitude of the data and the scope of these donations is way beyond an elderly person making a mistake or hitting the wrong click box, especially when they do it all in the same year, 2020, 2022. So I built a lot of advocacy for this issue in DC this week. And now I'm going to be focused on taking this to attorney generals and trying to recruit a couple of core attorney generals to help, people who would subpoena power. Me and the other journalists and Election Info and all these great people, these patriots around the country, we can come up with all kinds of data and spreadsheets. But unless we prompt investigations, right, we will never be able to figure out what's going on the back end. We're to, be able to follow the money, so to speak. There are some things that I think is important to understand how these things could be possible, right? You got to say, well, how can it happen? So, one of the FEC rules is, and I'm just paraphrasing, there's really no vetting of a donor under $200 or a donation under $200. So there's no, all you need is name and address and nothing else. You don't have to do address verification or anything else.
And let me point out too that this was one of the ways that in 2008 that some believed Obama was skirting the campaign finance restrictions by having some wealthy donors. They were buying these little store-bought Visa cards, for example. You could buy, they'd walk in with thousands of dollars and buy, $190 Visa card and then go make a donation with it as a way of laundering it. It just seemed that the spike in the number of those kinds of donations for Obama alone was so drastic that it led people to peel it back. And once they peeled it back, they noticed there was evidence of fraud, including some of these people were putting down Mickey Mouse.
I do a lot of work in e-commerce and as out of Silicon Valley. A lot of my customers are e-retailers. And, you can identify if that transaction is from a gift card, right, or from a personal credit card. There's ways to know that just by the sequence of numbers. So this stuff can easily be discovered. And the other thing that's troubling is that the Democratic aggregator, Act Blue, which is dedicated to Democratic causes, does not require a credit card donation to have a CVV code, right? That's the verification code that you see on the back of your credit cards. You can put your credit card in and they don't ever check, they don't even have to put a security code on it. So you can have stolen credit cards, you know, kind of, you know, and there's no address verification. This, the FEC just came out and said, responding to Marco Rubio, yeah, this is a source of fraud. Yeah, we got to change it. Are you kidding me? How did they not know this, right? And this is like e-commerce 101. And then the other thing that I've identified is that a lot of these, when you go to log in to do these donations, there's no, you guys know what a cop set is? You know how many
no, squares? No, please explain.
Yeah, that's the, it's an anti-bot device on a web page where you have to, it shows you a picture and you have to say, oh, how many headlights are in there? Or how many stoplights, how many bicycles?
Oh, right. A CAPTCHA. Yeah. CAPTCHA, I get it.
See, right. And by doing that manually as a human being, you verify that you're not an algorithm or a bot, right? Oh, you don't see the CAPTCHA device on these campaign websites, right?
Well, let me push back a little bit, and I'm not justifying this at all, but I am explaining that one of the reasons why a lot of those things are taken off is because the political class knows that when someone's making a donation, with each layer of things they have to do in order to make the donation that you add, the less likely they are to go through with it. And so you have this drop off. So in fairness, or maybe unfairness, but there is also a legitimate reason why they don't ask for the CVC code, and why they don't want their donors to have to go through CAPTCHA to get a donation in. And it's because the more difficult you make it to make a donation, the less likely they are to do it, and they'll Scott, even drop
called,
off.
That's called abandoning the cart, right? The shopping cart. If there's it gets
right.
too complicated.
But yeah, of course you would know this. Yeah, I did.
Every e-commerce retailer in the world says, you know what? I'd rather have the CVV code, and I'd rather have an abandoned cart than not have the CVV code and be on the hook for this purchase, right? So there's no excuse for CVV codes. The CAPTCHA, you know, e-retailers do that all the time. And you certainly see with, you know, with all kinds of surveys and stuff. So, yeah, you know what? It does add another layer, but you know what? Integrity sometimes has a price, right? We have to take
the shoes I agree. Yeah. I think
that's my argument. Right.
Should be required. But see, what we're talking about here is, on the one hand, we are looking at what could be massive fraud.
Right.
And I wanted to tease out the parts that are not necessarily evidence of fraud, just evidence of wanting to raise as much money as they can.
That's right.
Versus the real actual things where the people are making donations that they could not have possibly made.
All the things I'm just listing out are enablers. That's all I'm saying they are. Right? These are
sure. And in order to stop these kinds of things, or like I referenced earlier, the store bought gift cards, that would be stopped by something like this. And
well, I think you can block those. You can actually block that card type too, if you wanted to. You know, I have to look into that. I don't know, but I think
may not be. You know, again, if you can't hand $150 in cash to your candidate, you might want to go buy a card and make a donation or something like that. There could be legitimate reasons for it. Most likely is especially in the case of Obama in 08, where it just skyrocketed, and they were having tons of them with fake Disney names like Donald Duck, Daffy Duck, the Huey, Dewey, and Louie were all Mickey Mouse. Oh. They were all making individual donations with these cards, and so raising questions about.
I think Minnie Mouse was a top donor in 2008.
It's might be. I don't. I was going strictly by memory. I remember covering it at the time, but that was. So I would say, on the one hand, we're talking about two different things here. The changes that could be made that could actually make it more difficult fraud to occur. And also, and those, and that's what we were talking about with the CAPTCHA and with the CDC.
We have to have a two-tiered approach here, right? We want to prompt the launch of investigations, right? Which we probably won't get until either the Attorney Generals do it we change in the White House. The other thing is, what we can do is recommend reform at the FEC that includes CAPTCHA codes, mandating CVVs, doing spot audits of donors instead of campaigns. They only audit campaigns. They need to audit donors based on triggers and red flags. There's got to be full vetting for everything under $200, right? I know we want to make things easy, but you know what? Integrity has a price, and we have to make sure that we do that. And that's why I don't want to call out a problem without a solution, right? My whole career is based on solving
problems. Well, part of this is the idea of privacy. You know, if you want to give $100 to a candidate and your boss, you don't want your boss to see you're voting against, you're supporting a candidate who's against his interest. You know, there are some reasonable privacy concerns in that regard, but they certainly, you know, anything over 200, they scrapped all that and saying the privacy doesn't matter. We're going to make public your $1,000 donations and your $5,000 donations. And so people can't really maintain privacy about that. But that was the idea. That's under $200. You know, you could make a donation to a candidate of your choice, and you couldn't be, you know, the idea that other people, your neighbors or your boss, people you work with.
In my own campaigns, I had people who could not donate to me because they didn't want to show up on a list of Democrats who donated to Dominic Rapini. I get it.
Yeah, no, and it's you can see why, especially with the Democrat Party. It's a organized crime racket, and they will use the rules and they'll use their power against you, just as we discovered in 2012 when these major donors to Mitt Romney suddenly they got made public, turned into public figures, and then investigated by the Obama Justice Department, and they made they didn't pretend to be embarrassed about it at all. Obama himself referenced it, saying, well, you should be investigated. So they were kind of sending a message that they will crack down on you if you're not supporting them. And but it's a problem we have at this point. We have corrupt politicians. So,
the recap for all the listeners of what we're talking about, because we've covered a wide range of things. Guys, we're talking about millions or billions of dollars being donated from an outside source. We're talking dark money in the names of unsuspecting donors. In Connecticut, they're all elderly people. All right, we're seeing this happen across the country, and the research is being done by other great patriots who are doing the work that I'm doing. And what we're alleging is that we're looking at identity theft. I think there's elder abuse to be considered here, and then I think we're looking at dark money, most likely foreign money, or secret money that's coming in to get into these political interests. And I want to say one thing about the Republicans who I've identified in Connecticut. I went to visit them, and one woman donated $60,000 in Madison, Connecticut. So I went to her house. It's a little senior housing, and I asked the Republicans in the town, "Hey, do you guys know Arlene?" Right, she just gave $60,000 this past year to Republicans. No one knows her. Nobody knows who she is. Nobody's received a donation from her. The state party doesn't know who she is. And same thing in Trumbull, Connecticut, $100,000, this guy Henry. Nobody knows who the guy is, right? There's a woman named Susan in Oxford. The Oxford Republicans say, she gave $100,000? She doesn't give anything to us. We don't even know who she is.
I pointed out when we talked about this the other day, I said, if you're running a money laundering racket that you want to keep quiet, one of the things you would do is donate to the other party too. You donate to Republicans because then they're not going to want to investigate. And That was one of the things that came up in the China investigation back in the 90s. They gave $10,000 to a Republican, and that got all the news coverage. The millions that went to the Democrats got much less news coverage. And that was so it's probably a typical. It's highly speculative.
Yeah, it's a valid theory. But, and it's beyond coincidence for us.
Mr. Rapini, we're running out of time. Can you tell folks how to check out your data? Where can they get to? Do you have a website set up where this can be looked at?
Our website, libertypipeline.us, has not launched this yet officially, but get me on social media, Facebook at Dominic4CT and at Dominic4CT on Twitter. And my email is Dominic@Dominic4CT.us. I'm getting DMs every day from people asking how to do this investigations and what they can do. I need people to go out in the field and go meet some of these donors in Florida and Georgia and other states. I could use some help getting these signed affidavits. So Dominic, D-O-M-I-N-I-C.
Hey, Mr. Rapini, I gotta go. We are all out of time. Thank you so much for joining us on TNT Radio's Through the Looking Glass. Mm-hmm.